welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about the soil that's left behind when you remove plants from containers, and we can talk about mulching to protect plants in the winter and a whole bunch more with our two guests. One of them, Kevin Chasseau, the Ag Development Educator for UW-Madison, our UW-Madison Division of Extension. He works out of Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Kevin, good to have you back.
As always, Larry, it's a pleasure.
Diana Offuth, our other guest, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. And Diane, good to see your smiling face.
That's great to be here again, Larry. Thanks.
So we visit with them about all kinds of things. We talk soil and mulching, but we can certainly take other plant questions or gardening questions as well, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, is it usually a good idea to remove all the soil from those pots, those containers?
Well, as you've heard before, Larry, when I've been on the show, and same with Diane, you know, there's that thing we say, it depends, right? And in this case, it does matter what was in the pot and what type of soil it is. And we need to investigate and make, you know, decisions whether or not it is appropriate to save that soil. So, but the short answer is, unless you have a very sick looking plant that was growing in that pot and you know it was diseased, if your plants were healthy all the way up until the killing frost, the soil that's in that pot should certainly be appropriate to repurpose and recycle. Now, you can't do that just by dumping the soil out and reusing it again. There's certain things we need to think about. And I know Diane has some ideas on what she does. But our first concern, of course, is pathogens and any disease that might be in that soil. And if that's the case, then we probably don't want to recycle it. But if it's looking like it's not a diseased plant, then you have lots of options. So, yeah. Diane, I don't know what you like to do with your reused potting soil to kind of refreshen it, but there's certain things we need to be taking into account, don't we?
Well, that's right. And, you know, it does seem like a waste to dump out a whole big container of potting mix every year and buy new stuff. And a lot of it can be reused in there, but it does deplete, and it depletes faster than like your garden soil would, because remember that these potting mixes are usually all organic matter, like composted wood chips and things like that. They don't have any actual sand, silt, or clay mineral soil in them. And that's means that they don't hold nutrients as well. And they also continue to break down. They're decomposing all year. So you've all experienced where the soil level in those containers gets lower as the year goes on. And that's because of decomposition. And after a while, it can decompose into such fine particles that oxygen can't get through there well. And so it's a good idea, if you are going to reuse some of it, to like remove the at least like the top couple of inches, remove all the roots of the plants that were growing in there for the year, and then add some fresh stuff, ideally some compost. That's going to add all the trace minerals and nutrients that you want. It's going to stir that in with what's left in the pot and refill it up to the level that you need to before planting again in spring. The other things that you, and again, as Kevin said, that's assuming you didn't have any diseases in there. Yeah. If you grew tomatoes, for example, in your containers and you had tomato blight in there, it's a good idea to get rid of all of that and then sterilize the container before you use it again and use fresh potting mix. And then the other thing is you can use that potting mix elsewhere. You can throw it on your compost pile to become part of your future compost. You can throw it in your garden bed if you want. You can, you know, throw it in a wheelbarrow and mix it with a whole bunch of stuff and create a whole new batch of potting soil. But again, it doesn't have to all be just wasted and used. Larry, I know you use straw bales a lot. So
yeah, I use, and they decompose very, very well. And I've used that in another garden area. And this year, I had something dug a hole in my backyard that I didn't. I was surprised to see it. It was right next to the house. It was trying to get in or something. And I, frankly, I used one pot of soil. When I got the flowers out, I just dumped the soil right in that hole. So
there you go. That's a way to recycle that potting mix. And of course, because that potting mix was mostly organic matter, it'll decompose, and that's going to settle. So you might need to add something more in that hole next year. But that's one way to use it.
Well, it was something I wanted to get rid of that hole, and I got rid of it in a hurry with that pot. It had a pretty good sized pot. Do you clean the pots, by the way? If you take the soil out, do you clean the pots?
Well, you know, again, as Kevin mentioned, if you had diseases in there, then it's a good idea to sterilize or clean the pot. If you didn't, and you were just growing something that's not very disease prone, like, you know, your basic petunias and annual flowers, it's probably not a big thing that you really clean that off. But if you did have any kind of diseases, it's a great idea to knock out all the loose soil, hose it all down, and then clean it with like a 10% bleach solution and put that on there, let it sit on there for a while to kill any kind of pathogens that might be on there. But as long as you get rid of most of the plant debris or soil that's stuck on the sides, you're probably getting rid of most of the pathogens that would come in there, because most of those things, again, like the tomato blights and stuff, they're a foliar thing. So they kind of have to get on the leaves. And so if you don't have much stuff left behind, you won't have a major problem with it.
Karen from Madison is a kindred spirit with me, I think. She said she mixes her used potting soil with grass clippings and uses it to backfill the holes that her dogs feel they need to dig in the yard. So nothing wrong with that, for sure. Oh, man. Mark in Brooklyn, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, good morning. Thank you. I was wondering if either one of your guests would have ideas on how to plant hickory nut seeds to create hickory nut trees.
So hickory nuts, take those hickory nuts, and how do you plant them to get a tree? You're looking at a long-term project here, Mark, I'm pretty sure, but who wants to take a crack at that?
Kevin? Well, I'm going to assume that these are natively harvested hickory nuts that you might have found in the area.
Is that right, Mark?
Yes, in my yard. Yes, in my woods, in my yard.
Yeah, right. So that's the first thing we need to acknowledge, that there's a thing called providence. And if we take plant materials that are too far away from their original point of origin, they might not thrive as well, you know, when you move them hundreds of miles from where they originated. They'll still do fine, but that's the first thing that we need to at least acknowledge, that it's best to propagate plants that are from the general area or region. And, you know, that's, you know, in this case, it's right from your backyard. So you don't have that to worry about. And I'm pretty certain, you know, these seeds are going to need to have some kind of winter vernalization or a cold chilling period. And again, if you want to emulate nature, what does nature do? You know, the nut falls, or the squirrel grabs it from the tree, and then the squirrel grabs a nut from the ground and it finds a place to hide it. And then it forgets about the nut. And lo and behold, that's where we often see seedlings popping up in all kinds of places. So if you want to emulate nature, you just have to think about that. It's like, well, let's allow this nut to see some winter weather. And that could be, you know, in a cool place in a garage where the squirrels can't get it. Or maybe you actually want to plant those nuts in a place where they can overwinter and have like a little nursery bed and see what comes up in the spring. I mean, I think that would probably be the simplest way. Just think like nature. And I don't know what else you might need to do to think about it. Obviously, you want to select nuts that are healthy and not, you know, disease looking or compromised. But I don't know, Diane, if there's any other comments you would have, but that seems to be my approach to trying to.
I wondered about depth. if you're going to dig a hole and put them in, how deep would you go, Diana?
Well, the general rule is that you put seeds 1 to 2 times their diameter under the ground. So okay. Hickory nut's going to be, I don't know, maybe an inch diameter sort of a thing, at least. That's the hickory nuts in my woods are. So they don't need to be buried real deep, but maybe about an inch of covering. But one of the things that you can do, as Kevin mentioned, they do need that cold period, and they probably need, I'd have to look up for sure, but you're probably talking 14 to 16 weeks of cold, moist weather, and that's what winter normally gives them. So you can get that by your garage. You can get that in refrigerators. Or one of my favorite ways to do this is, you know how at Christmas you always get those tins full of popcorn and you eat the popcorn, you know, the fundraiser things, yeah. And then you have all those tins around. Those make great containers for getting seeds over winter, because you can just put the seeds in there and just set them outside in a shady spot so the sun doesn't get it and warm it up. But the tin will protect it from mice and squirrels and things like that who would come and eat those nuts. And otherwise, like Kevin said, you could plant them in like a corner of your vegetable garden or wherever you want them, but you'd have to put some kind of like chicken wire or something over them so that critters don't dig them up over the winter. And then nature will do its thing. When you collect the seeds, whether it's black walnuts or hickories or acorns or any of these other nuts that we like to grow, it's a good idea to collect them and throw them in a bucket of water. And any of them that float probably won't germinate. And that's usually because there are weevils that will lay their eggs on the nuts, and the larva will tunnel around inside and eat the nut meat out of them. And then you've probably seen that tiny little hole in acorns and things. That's where they come out then when they're ready to become adults. And so if they float, usually that means there's air in there because something's been eating that nut. And so don't bother planting those. Just plant the ones that sink, and you can usually have pretty good luck with it. But otherwise, you know, it's a pretty simple sort of a process.
Yeah. Mark, thanks. Good luck with those hickory nuts. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Phone in or email your gardening questions. Kevin Chesso and Diana Offith, our guests today. Natalie Guyette's our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Diana Offith and Kevin Chesso from UW Extension. And by the way, we're partnering with UW-Madison Extension Horticulture Program to learn more about your experiences listening to Garden Talk. Love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to good use, as well as we'd like your ideas for future Garden Talk topics. You can just go to WPR.org/Larry and click on today's show note, and you'll find a link there for just it'll take you a couple of minutes to fill it out. So ideas@WPR.org/Larry, and tell us what you learn during the show. Love to have that. Tim emailed to ask if it's too late in the season to overseed the lawn. Doesn't say where he's located, but I don't think it makes a difference. Maybe it does. I don't, Diana?
So that is a little bit of a tough question, because of course we've had a really long season here and we don't have any frozen ground anywhere in the state yet. So in some ways it's too late and it's also too early. So right now things could get cold and frozen really, really fast. So if you throw a seed down now and it germinates, those little baby plants aren't going to have time to get enough of a root system established before the real cold hits. So, but once it gets colder and they're starting to get some frost in the ground, you can do what's called winter seeding, where you throw the seed down and then it'll germinate right away in spring when conditions are right. So that's a real common and a successful way to do some overseeding. I think we're a little bit kind of right in between right now where I would probably just wait a little bit and then try for the winter seeding thing. On the other hand, we don't know how long this warmer weather is going to hold out. I think it's supposed to get colder, at least in this area of the state this week. And, you know, grass seed isn't super expensive, but my opinion, I would wait at this point and not chance that it germinates and then just dies.
There you go. Thank you, Tim, for that question. And again, you can join us 800-642-1234 or again, email to ideas@wpr.org. Somebody wondered about large containers, getting rid of, you might have something that's either connected to the house itself or just a great big container in terms of the soil and what to do with them, or even raised beds, the person asked about.
Yeah, I think Diane's comments earlier about the fact that, you know, if it is true potting soil and there's no mineral soil in there, all that organic material, you know, will settle and stuff. And in those larger containers and raised beds, all we can really do with them is refresh them. You know, you could do that in the fall, but typically, you know, for me, I do it in the spring. I have some large containers that I'm able to lift and kind of put along the edge of my house, and I stack them up for the winter, and then come spring, I, you know, haul them back out. And that's when I'll go in and I'll scoop out and mix and try to renovate within the existing container. So if you have a raised garden box, you know, one of these 4x8 ones, they might be, you know, 12 inches tall, or maybe they're 3 foot tall. You're not going to move those. And, you know, so all you can do is just kind of shovel and mix in and amend those soils with some of those materials that Diane already mentioned. On my smaller containers, I'll dump the soil out. I actually like to spread it out on some black plastic when we have those warm, sunny fall days and get it a little dry. And then I'll transfer it into a steel garbage can and put the lid on it. And that's kind of where I store my used potting soil from the smaller containers. And then in the spring, you just, you know, transfer from the garbage can and refill those smaller containers and amend it and all that stuff. I like the steel containers, kind of like what Diane said with the nuts, using a tin. I've had chipmunks in my garage, and they will actually bury seeds within those and dig or chew into those plastic garbage containers. So I go with the steel, but that's just another thing to keep in mind. So just amend it in the spring, investigate it, figure out how much more. Sometimes it might be, you know, 30 to 40% more material needs to be added to bring it up to the consistency we'd like.
Let's take another. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Diana.
I was just going to say raised beds were mentioned, and raised beds, if it's like a raised bed that you grow vegetables in and that sort of thing, that soil is going to settle a little every year, and you should add 1 to 2 inches of compost to the top every year and work it into the soil for the root zone area. And remember that compost is organic matter, and organic matter decomposes throughout the year pretty fast. So after a year, you've only got about 10% left. So if you put 100 pounds of compost on your raised bed, the next year there's only 10 pounds of it left. So you should keep in mind that every year you should add some compost, and that's going to bring the soil level back up to the edges of your raised bed. And in that way, you're going to be replenishing your nutrients and your soil structure.
Larry in, Delta, Wisconsin.
Hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I've got a question. In a container with potting soil and horse manure, what percentage horse manure to potting soil?
All right.
Well, I know Diane has horses, so you maybe have some experiences with this, Diana.
Yeah, you're the horse expert, Diana.
So really, we don't want to be putting fresh horse manure in there. We really would prefer that it be composted. And then it's just compost, whether it's composted horse manure or composted compost or composted goat manure or whatever, it's still just compost. And it's 100% organic matter, as is your potting mix. So there's not really a percentage that, you know, you'd be looking at. If you want to mix some composted horse manure in with the potting mix, you know, I'd probably say, you know, if you had a 10 inch deep container, I'd maybe put an inch or two on top, but not much more than that. But again, you really do want that manure to have been composting at least for, you know, a while so that it's not recognizable. And the reason for that is otherwise, you don't have to necessarily worry about the manure burning plants. I know people are concerned about that, but horse manure isn't necessarily super high in nitrogen, at least not within a couple of days after it comes out of the horse. But that all that fresh organic matter that's in there, the microbes are going to really go after it because that's their food source and it's going to decompose really fast. And so sometimes that process can utilize what nitrogen there is there, and the microbes will utilize it faster than your plants will. So your plants might get some nitrogen deficiencies. And that's why we don't like to put fresh organic matter or fresh manure in around plants. So so I put a couple inches in, but again, I make sure it's composted a little. And then, you know, like my horse manure is mixed with shavings that came out of the stall. So it's a good idea to have that stuff sit and compost, and so that you can't recognize it so much before you start using it.
Yeah, those shavings would probably be eating away at the nitrogen too, in a way.
Right, because they're going to be a high carbon, and we can, you know, talk about the carbon to nitrogen ratio and stuff. But if the carbon levels are really high, then you've got a nitrogen issue and stuff. So, and that again, it's better that that stuff has been composting for a while and that balances out.
Judy from Stevens Point emailed. She was enjoying the discussion on starting hickory nut trees from the nut. She said Jung's Garden Center is in her area had hickory nut trees in the bare root room this spring, just in case someone wants to take an easier path to a hickory nut tree. Yes, you are planting for the future generations. That's for sure. And yeah, and Jung's certainly, those bare root, it would be shaving many years off the time. You might be alive to really see a pretty good sized tree if you do it that way.
Well, just a follow up on this. This might be a good time to talk a little bit about fall planting of trees. I mean, you can do fall planting, and if you wanted to do that, I think Diana, we're probably still in an okay spot. Maybe it's a little late, but this brings up the question of our other topic that we want to at least talk about was what we call winter mulching.
Yeah,
and winter mulch serves a purpose a little differently than mulch that we might put in our gardens during the growing season. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of mulching the soil because we want to protect the soil, and there's no better way to do that with some kind of known quality or organic mulch. But come winter, we also get the benefit of insulating the soil and protecting delicate roots and providing some of that insulation to get some of our perennial plants through the winter, because we don't know, you know, what's going to happen in the next couple, 3 months. If we have a snowless winter and 25 degree below zero temperature for 5 days, you know, that soil temperature can actually get cold enough that you kill off roots. And that's what we see, that winter, you know, dieback just because of that. So putting mulch down is a really, where, again, it gets back to that garden, the lawn question. We're a little bit too early to put down a good heavy layer of winter mulch, but the window is certainly getting there. And I know from my experiences, and it's a little more challenging the further north you go because we can get snow before the ground freezes. But ideally, we want that ground to get sort of frozen or awfully close to frozen before we go in and do that winter insulating with some kind of mulch. It could be straw, depending on, you know, the source, but it could be other like shredded bark mulches as well. So that's the concept behind winter mulching that we also had wanted to acknowledge. Hey, that's something that we got to think about. Protect the soil from freezing. And once our soil temperatures get into the low 20s and into the teens, that's when our roots are going to be subject to injury. Roots can handle frozen soil, obviously, but those soil temperatures are typically in the mid-20s, especially if they got snow. But when there's no snow, then we might need to do something else. So I don't know, Diane, if you had any other general comments. I know I got a little off subject there with that, but that's another activity that's really timely right about now is to think about, you know, maybe we need to think about protecting those more tender plants with some mulch.
And that is a really good point. And winter mulches serve different purposes. As Kevin mentioned, our summer mulches, you know, we're looking at weed control and moisture control. But with winter, if you've planted any new perennials this year, winter mulch is a really good idea. And as Kevin mentioned, we really want there to be a tiny little layer, maybe up to an inch of frost in the soil. So the surface actually frozen before we put mulch on, because we're not trying to keep the soil from freezing. What we're trying to do is actually keep the soil frozen in spring. Or if we get like January thaw and we get 60 degrees, it's that freeze-thaw cycles that will heave roots up out of the ground. And certain perennials like coral bells that have a real distinct crown or strawberries are notorious for that, because that frozen soil pushes up on those crowns and pushes them up out of the ground. And in that process, it breaks off roots. And then when the soil thaws and sinks back down, those crowns are up above ground and then they dry out. So if you planted any new perennials this year, it's a really good idea to put some kind of winter mulch over them once the soil starts to freeze. And like Kevin said, you can use straw, you can use leaves, you can use evergreen boughs if you did some trimmings on something. And what you're trying to do is to pretend it's like a snow layer, like Kevin alluded to. Because we may or may not get snow, and the snow may come and go, because we do tend to have winter thaws a lot of times in different areas of the state. So, and then if it's a newer shrub or something like that, it's a great idea to do that as well to keep that soil from freezing down to too low of a temperature. Obviously, we can't mulch our whole yards where all of our tree roots are. And if we do get those cold winters with no snow cover, that's when we see a lot of tree die back the next year. But especially for the newly planted things and smaller things, winter mulch is a great idea. But don't do it yet.
Yeah.
Because the ground's not frozen. And if we put it on too early, it'll keep the ground from freezing. And you have more activity underneath that mulch from fungi and rodents and stuff like that. So we do want it nice and cold down there before we put the mulch on.
Let's give Jay and Two Rivers a chance to join in. Jay, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if this has been a good practice, but we've been real lucky for the last couple of decades. We've left our maple tree leaves in the garden area or wherever there are, we have flower beds for the winter, and then we rake them out in the spring before the new shoots start coming up. So I don't know if we're encouraging disease or if that's protecting similar to regular mulch.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, right? And I've talked about leaves, and they're a wonderful organic source. You know, I always tell people, if you're looking for some local free organic matter, just look up into the trees, right? And every fall, if you got deciduous trees, you get this blanket of leaves. Now, what do you do with them? So, yeah, it's probably you know, certain leaves will compact more and maybe you get some mold issues. That's why we're concerned about getting leaves off of the grass, which is fine. Obviously, grass is different than a garden bed. But, you know, I tend to want to keep some of those leaves on my soil because I have sandy soil and I'm always looking to add organic matter. So it's just a matter of how does that look come spring when you've got this thick layer of leaves and you want to plant into it. You know, they'll decompose eventually, but if you want to take the less laborious route and just let those leaves fall and, you know, maybe you don't even want to rake them up, you could just leave them there, but it depends, right? What kind of garden you want to have, and maybe you don't like the look of having those leaves and that they interfere with the type of planting you want to do. So, you know, the other thing with this time of year is fall cleanup. I tend not to get too carried away with cleaning up every last twig and branch. You know, there's winter interest, but there's also habitat and snow catching, and just leave some of that stuff up there for the winter. It's not harming anything. So leaves would be the same way. So, yeah, I think, but if it's working, you know, don't
keep doing it, huh? And I know people who run their leaves through a lawnmower, get them in a pile, run them through a lawnmower so they don't flatten out.
That's on my to-do list this weekend. That we got a good blanket of leaves on the grass. I'm going to get my push mower with the bagger, and it takes a little more time because I got to stop and empty that leaf bag, but I just make a huge pile in a bin, add a little water, and there's some grass clippings mixed in there from obviously mowing, and I let it sit all winter long, and come June, I've got a partially decomposed, what we call leaf mold, and it's a perfect mulch, at least for my gardening, around any number of plants. So it's, you know, you just got to take the effort to do that now, and then you have it next May and June.
Jay, thank you again. Appreciate the call. Dave and Toma wants to build a couple of raised beds for next year. He's wondering how tall should he be making them? And it doesn't say if it's raised beds for flowers or veggies. Let's assume it's for vegetables.
Well, and that's a great question, but the answer is up to him, because you can make a raised bed just by mounding up soil and not have any sides on it. And that helps with drainage. It helps the soil area to warm up faster in the spring. And it helps to be able to amend your soil if you don't have great soil. And then you can build them 3 feet tall so that you can stand at them and work at them. So it kind of depends on what your goals are for building that raised bed. You can grow great things in a raised bed, again, especially if you don't have good indoor or native soil, because then you're bringing in soil and you can create a great soil mix within that raised bed. But you can also just amend the soil in the ground to get really good and have just as much success growing things. So it kind of depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to not have to bend over as far, you can make it a foot tall. You can make it 2 feet tall. If you don't want to bend over at all, you can make it 3 feet tall or 4 feet tall. We have raised beds that are handicap accessible and wheelchair accessible. So there's no, you know, easy answer there. The one rule of thumb to follow, though, is assuming that we're looking at growing vegetables in there. Vegetables are all annuals, and annuals have a root system that wants to go down about 8 inches on average. So you want to have at least 8 inches of good, well-drained rooting area, which means you need at least a couple more inches for what's on the bottom, which usually isn't all that well drained. You want to make sure that you have some kind of situation so that water won't be caught in it, whether you need some drainage holes or something like that. But generally speaking, 10 inches high is probably the minimum as a container planting. And it'd be the same concept with a raised bed.
I know with the straw bales, I'm always surprised when, or at least I was the first couple times when I, at the end of the season with the tomatoes in the, how long, I mean, those tomato roots went all the way through to the bottom of the straw bale, which is probably about 12 inches or so at least.
Right. And in more. In a straw bale with the porousness of it and the ability for those roots to move through those straw particles, they'll go down more than they will actually in soil because the soil is a little harder to push through. But that's a great experiment and a great way to see a root system once you pull that bale apart.
Oh, it's fascinating the first time I looked at that. Sharon from Oakfield area in Fond du Lac County emailed to say she put in a small holly bush this summer, wondering if she should put burlap around it to protect it this winter. Holly bush. What do you think, Diana?
Well, holly is so that one's a little challenging for both Kevin and I because holly really isn't hardy up here. but she's really right to be a little concerned about it because even in the South, then that means that it's a little marginal. And because the holly leaves stay on over winter, they are going to be exposed to drying winter winds and get desiccated. And so that would be the reason to put burlap around them. So ideally, it's been planted in a little bit of a sheltered place that's not going to be getting whipped by winter winds. But we don't know what our winter will be. If it's a dry, windy, cold winter, you're more likely to have some damage. So putting burlap around it probably isn't going to hurt anything. Just make sure when you put it on that you don't damage any branches. Don't put it on too tight. Make sure that air and light are still kind of going through that to some extent. And being that it's the first year planted, especially, it might be beneficial because it doesn't have a really big root system, which means it's having a hard time right now with taking up water and getting those leaves nice and hydrated going into winter. So I would make sure that you're soaking that right up until the ground freezes so that it is as well hydrated as possible. Whether or not the burlap is necessary, I can't say 100% sure, but it might be a little extra protection.
Yeah, there you go.
Especially the first year.
Thank you so much for that question. Kevin Chesso is the Ag Development Educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. And Diana Alfeth, the UW Extension Horticulture Educator, is for Pierce County. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network from UW Extension. Kevin Chesso and Diana Alfeth, our guests today, to talk about what's going on in the garden this time of the year and what questions you have. They will be happy to answer them. And speaking of questions, we'd love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to good use, as well as your ideas for future Garden Talk topics. Just go to WPR.org/Larry, click on today's show note for a link, or you can type in go.wisc.edu/radio to any browser. It's a little questionnaire, just take you a couple minutes to fill out, and we would love to have you do that. So please look into it. Fawn in Madison will give you a chance now. Hi, Fawn.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Well, my husband and I moved into a house that has a beautiful, majestic, large black walnut in the backyard, sprawling, dominates the yard. I really miss gardening. I really wanted to continue gardening, let's put it that way. So I made a raised bed in the part of the sunny part of the yard that didn't have the tree directly over it, the canopy over it. And that went well for the first year or two, and then it was completely taken over by Creeping Charlie. And I just didn't have the heart to tackle it all out this year. And I would like very much some advice on how I can go about this. Do I have to rip out the whole thing? I was thinking of ripping out all, just taking out all the soil and starting from scratch. A friend of mine suggested lasagna gardening. Would that be a solution.
How big is this, by the way, Fawn?
The garden, the raised bed is 3 by 8.
3 by 8, okay. And you had one other point you wanted to bring in.
Yeah, is there any hope for me to ever garden in the soil again on this property? Even if I were to chop down the tree, the roots would still be in the ground, right? So that wouldn't be an immediate solution
either.
It'd
take years and years and years and years and years. and then one more year.
Yeah, I think the general, what I've heard, and I'd have to double check, but it's like 7 years before it's kind of depleted enough that you can start doing things. But there are some plants that can grow around black walnuts that can tolerate the dugong that's given off by the trees. And we actually have a Extension Horticulture. We have a publication called Plants Tolerant to Dugong from the black walnuts. And so you might try some of those things. No, you're never going to get a tomato in the yard because tomatoes are highly sensitive to it. But there are some other things that you can garden in there. Now, were you in this raised bed, were you looking to grow perennials or vegetables, or what was the plan?
I'm growing mostly annual vegetables. And I hope a few perennial herbs.
And you have the creeping Charlie that's bothering you.
That's my bane.
Okay. So do you work the soil up in the spring and before you plant? Because that would obviously disrupt the creeping Charlie. Have you done that in the spring?
I did that last year and it knocked it back. But as we know, I think creeping Charlie, even little bits of it, can regenerate, isn't that true? Like starfish, basically, if you chop them up, regrow.
Yeah, so it does spread by roots, and those pretty little purple flowers that the pollinators love also turn into seeds. So you've probably got a big seed bank in there as well. So I guess my recommendation would be, you mentioned lasagna gardening, and you don't necessarily have to go full-blown lasagna gardening in there, but what you might consider is in the spring, or even right now, work it up, because that's going to bury and, again, set back that creeping Charlie some, and let it sit for the winter. And then in spring, work it up again, and then put down a good solid layer of cardboard. Save something over the winter that you get, just brown corrugated cardboard. It's organic and it is a wonderful weed suppressant. So in the spring, you could put that over the entire bed, and then you can cut holes in that cardboard where you want to plant your vegetables and your annual plants, and then cover the cardboard with some kind of mulch, mainly to keep the cardboard from drying out and blowing away. So that could be, again, straw or chopped leaves, not black walnut leaves. you could, get some in an annual bed, we don't normally recommend wood chips or shredded wood, because that takes longer to decompose. Again, straw, chopped leaves, pine needles, if you had good access to those, and put that several inches thick on top of the cardboard, so 3 to 4 inches thick. And what that will do is the cardboard will smother out little shoots of creeping Charlie and any creeping Charlie seeds that want to germinate in there. But you'll still have things germinate right next to the plants in the holes in the cardboard, and you want to pull those out of there as soon as they can. But that might be a way to get rid of it permanently or so. And I would do it that way every year, using a cardboard mulch, or if you don't get cardboard, you can put down 6 or 7 sheet thick newspaper. You can go to the paint department at the store, and they have like rolls of brown paper that work great for it as well. But creating some barrier there to keep that creeping Charlie from coming back. And I would do that every year, because seeds stay viable in the soil for multiple years. And that'll prevent you from having to weed anything, not just creeping Charlie.
Yeah, and that's good. I mean, it's 3 by 8, so it's a relatively easy place size to work with that way, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Good luck.
I'm going to just chime in here, Diane. You did mention that, and Larry, I think there's a link in the on the Garden Talk website to our horticulture website. It's
yes.
just Wisconsin Horticulture. And if you do a search on black walnut, you will get a number of articles related to black walnut. And the one Diane mentioned is one that comes up first. So it does list some of those very sensitive plants to juglone, as well as those that are tolerant. And asparagus, cabbage, eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, and rhubarb and potatoes are all sensitive. But the tolerant ones for vegetables are beans, beets, carrots, corn, melon, onions, parsnip, and squash. So there is hope if you do still have some toxicity issues. According to this fact sheet, there are options for growing different vegetables. So again, you know, there's information on that Hort website that might be helpful in this case.
Yeah, WPR.org/Larry and go to today's date. You're going to find it right there. Thank you, Fawn, for calling. Jeremy in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a sort of a natural hedgerow on the rear of my property that's kind of made of like kind of scrubby ash. I think it's ash. It might be ash or box elder. And it's kind of taking over back there. And I would like to clear it out and replace it with some things like dogwood or hazelnut or something like that that will attract a little bit more wildlife. It kind of seems to be kind of like suckering and shooting up kind of all over the place. And I was wondering if there were any strategies that I could use to get rid of it without completely tearing out all the soil, because it is a fairly large area.
Yeah. Diana, do you want to crack at that?
Sure. So trees have an amazing survival instinct. And so a lot of times you cut them off and they just shoot right back up. And some are worse about that than others. Box elder and ash both are notorious for that. And so are some of the other invasives like buckthorn. And that's one of the reasons it's so hard to get rid of. So you have a couple of options. Probably the easiest option, if you're not opposed to herbicides, is when you cut that scrubby tree off, immediately treat the cut stump with an herbicide. So you can paint it on, you can spray it on that cut part. And you have to do it right away before it starts to seal over. And what happens then is that herbicide goes down into the vascular system of that cut stump, into the roots, and it kills the roots so then they don't sucker and shoot back up. There are various herbicides that you can use. Probably the most recommended one is the ingredient is triclopyr, which you can find at your garden centers, Fleet Farm, whatever. It's usually labeled brush killer or poison ivy killer. But if you look at the active ingredient, it's usually triclopyr. You can also use high concentration Roundup or 2,4-D or combinations thereof, but that's the easiest and most effective way to get rid of them. There are other methods, such as cutting that off and then putting a bucket over it for a long time, because the idea is then that cut stump is in the dark so it doesn't shoot back up. You can also just keep cutting. As soon as a leaf appears, cut it off, and you eventually starve out that root system. But you got to do that regularly, because every time a leaf appears, it's doing photosynthesis and storing energy back in that root system again. And that's a much longer term process to get rid of them that way. So, and then like once the roots are dead, they can just decompose down there, and you can plant your dogwoods and service berries and other desirable plants right in between those dead roots. They'll decompose over time. You'll probably get mushrooms occasionally, because those decay fungi will be working on it, but you don't have to, like you say, rip it all up with a skid steer and that kind of thing. You can do it more gradually if you can get those things to actually die.
There you go. Thank you, Jeremy, for calling. Appreciate it. Karen in Eau Claire, hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a spirea that was transplanted from my daughter's house to mine. And I tell you, it's kind of funny. I wish you could see a picture of it. He is bound and determined to live, and he literally has barely larger than maybe 3 toothpicks put together for a stem. And he has a ball on top the size of like a baseball of leaves. And he has been sitting like that all summer. But he's alive.
So you want to know how to overwinter it. And in about 30 seconds or so, could you talk about that, Diana?
Sure. So it's got a root system, but obviously a small root system because it's not growing a lot up on the top. My first question would be to look at like the soil, if it's got a good soil mixture, if it's been getting enough water, that sort of thing. But bottom line is it's alive. Spirea are very resilient. They grow quickly in the spring. So I would just, like we talked earlier, put some mulch over it after the ground gets colder to protect the little root system that it has. And then in spring, just maybe give it a little dose of fertilizer. If you haven't had a soil test done, make sure it doesn't get drought stressed. Put some other mulch around it and let it go.
Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso, our guests today. Kevin, ag development educator for Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties, and Diana Alfeth, UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County. I'm Larry Mailer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mailer here with my two guests, Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso. Diana, the UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County. Kevin's the ag development educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Questions for them about your garden or lawn area? I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Or email us to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Cy in Hudson, we'll give you a chance. Cy, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hey, Larry, great show. We have our backyard is made up of a small forest of pine trees, red pine. We have planted a large bed of hostas and another large bed of ferns in there. And each fall, the pine trees rain about an inch thick bed of pine straw, pine needles. Should I remove those pine needles and or should I be putting some oak leaves on either of those areas?
Diana, you're shaking your head no.
Well, in my opinion, that pine needle stuff, that's a great mulch. Nature's just dropping it down there. That stuff's going to be decomposing, releasing nutrients. So as long as it's not thick enough that it's smothering your plants and interfering with their ability to push up through it, I wouldn't bother with it. I also don't really see any benefit to adding oak leaves in there. You've obviously already got a nice mulch. It's probably keeping a lot of weeds down and weed seeds from germinating. I don't see any benefit to adding oak leaves. That's just another form of natural mulch. So I don't know, Kevin, you got any other thoughts on that?
No. I think, again, like my earlier comment, if you want free organic matter, just look up, right? Our trees provide them all the time with their dropping of their leaves, whether it's needles or the actual oak, you know, deciduous. And as long as they have a chance to kind of weather and age, there's this notion that pine needles are acidic or oak leaves are acidic. And that really doesn't hold true, especially after they've sat a while. Now, you know, right off the tree, perhaps fresh, you know, with the tannins and maybe some sap in there, yeah, they could be slightly acidic. But for the most part, once they've fallen and they're dry, they're in that straw stage, pine straw, they're wonderful mulch. So if they're not interfering with the plant, the growth of your plant, it's a perfect way to protect the soil. That's the whole reason why we're advocating for mulching and protecting the soil rather than having it bare.
And in fact, that's a great resource to rake them out of there and use them in other places in your garden, because if you've got those that resource there, pine needles are a great mulch everywhere in your vegetable garden, your perennial beds, your annual flowers. It's just a great resource. So you're lucky to have that.
There you go, Si. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Sandy from New Berlin wonders, she has a dead ash tree removed from her yard. She's having it done. Wondering if she can use the wood inside in her fireplace. Why not?
Yep. Absolutely. No matter what killed that ash tree, whether it was emerald ash borer or verticillium wilt or whatever, the wood is just fine. And it'll be a great way to use that resource. And remember the ash tree in January as you're sitting by the cozy fire.
Okay. Lynette in Beloit. We'll go to you. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a rose bush question.
Okay.
I have a rose bush that got trampled when I had a window put in last year, and it was didn't grow all summer. And lo and behold, the other day when I was taking care of some leaves, it's about a foot tall. And it just looks beautiful. It just looks very healthy. So I'm not sure what I should do with it over the winter. I don't really want to cut it back, or should I just, you know, mulch it really well when it's time?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do much with it. If it was a rose bush that had been there for quite a while, then it has a really nice established root system, which is what allowed it to shoot back up. So I wouldn't do anything different to it than you've done every other winter. It's obviously hardy rose that made it through winter. And
it's right next to the house, too.
Yeah, right. And so if it were me, I would just let it go. And then in spring, see what it's doing, trim away anything that's dead, and hopefully it'll fill in and take off next year and recover.
There you go. Thank you, Lynette. Scott in Pleasant Prairie. Hello.
Hi. I've got a question about this last summer. I built a couple of raised garden beds. And I used compost, just straight compost from the local recycling center. And the gardens really didn't take off this year. I don't know if it was the weather or it was too dry or too hot, but I had zucchinis, I had cucumbers. And I'm just wondering, is it maybe that the compost is too rich by itself? Maybe I should mix in some other material? Just interested to me about that.
Well, I've been on the show before, Larry, and I always talk about don't guess, take the test. There's nothing wrong with taking some time and $15 or whatever it costs to do a soil test, and then at least you'll get some of those analytics to answer some of those basic questions related to the soil, basically soil chemistry, and pH is our most important analytic we get back from our soil test. So, you know, that's something that I always want to ask. Well, maybe it's too acidic. You know, we don't know the source of that compost. And I'm assuming if it was done properly, it shouldn't be an issue. Compost by nature tends to be, you know, somewhat neutral. But, you know, again, knowing the source and how it was made does make a difference. So that's just something that I would throw out there as well. Let's contemplate that. And then beyond that, you're doing more horticulture CSI and trying to figure out why those plants didn't do well. Is it environment, too wet, too dry? Were the, you know, again, the fertility levels not right? Some of that soil test information. You know, so it really depends on how far you want to go to get the right answer. But intuitively, you know, no harm in, you know, perhaps amending that with some more appropriate materials that you think might, you know, benefit the plant. You know, maybe it is a nutrient deficiency and the compost didn't provide enough nutrients. And, you know, you maybe need to apply something that's a little more rich as far as the nutrient content goes, because not all compost is very high in nutrients. Again, depends on the source. So I would tend to want to, you know, hedge my bets and say, well, you know, maybe it was lacking in fertility, and adding some kind of organic fertilizer or slow release, you know, fertilizer to the soil come next spring, and seeing how your plants respond.
Yeah.
Did I understand correctly that you used straight compost and didn't have any other soil in that raised bed?
The recycle center, and they put in a dump, and then I just put it right in the garden bed there, and I thought that would be great.
So compost, you can grow in straight compost, but usually in a raised bed situation, it's better if you mix a bunch of compost in with some actual soil, sand, silt, and clay, because that sand, silt, and clay, that mineral part of it, that holds nutrients and allows nutrient availability a little bit different. And in straight compost, it's not that you can't grow great stuff in compost. We all had things sprout on our compost pile and do great, right? But it does raise some challenges. So I don't think your question about the compost being too rich is an issue, but compost holds moisture a little bit differently. It's continuously breaking down. And so that might have been, altering the availability of nutrients to the plants themselves. So if anything, I would agree with Kevin that maybe adding some actual topsoil into that and then doing a soil test to see where you're at would be your best bet to get started for this next year.
Yeah, there you go, Scott. Thank you very much for calling. Tom in Madison, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Larry. I have a question. I've got a couple of Canadian hemlock trees in my yard, and two of them have dual trunks. And I'm wondering whether I can just leave these trees alone, or should I remove one of those trunks? And if so, when should I do it?
And they're fairly young trees, you're saying.
Well, they're about 12 years old now. 12 years, they've been in our lot about 7. I would expect they're about 5 or 6 when we bought them.
Okay.
So about 12 feet tall. The trunks are, I'd say at the base, maybe 1.25 inches in diameter.
Okay. So does he cut one off, or do you want them, can they grow together that way?
Yeah, this gets back to another one of these rules of thumbs when we're planting anything in our landscape is, you got to think years ahead, and what are these plants going to look like 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road? And with our trees, obviously, they're very long-lived. And picture those two small, trunks that are relatively close to each other growing up, and 20 years later, what might that look like? And in urban settings, it's a little bit different, situation than if it's in a forested, because we can go out into the woods and see all kinds of double trunks and this and that, and they seem to be doing fine, and they're more protected from the wind, so maybe they don't blow over, because you just got to think about that as those trees mature. So I would have a tendency to it depends, but if the better thing to do might be to take one of those out, it's always better to do it when the plants are younger than when they're older. On older trees, now you've got yourself a little bit more of a conundrum, and that's where you got to really get an arborist or somebody who knows about trees and how safe they are if they stay together like that and things like that. But I would hedge to kind of evaluate the landscape and picture those trees and how they're going to look down the road. And if now's as good a time as any when they're smaller, you could probably still do this yourself versus waiting 5-10 years from now. And now you've got
some expense.
Story. Yeah. So
I would agree with that. Looks like Diana is nodding yes too. So there you go, Tom. Thank you for that question. Carrie in who's near Plum City. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Carrie. It's a two-part question. It involves chickweed, and it's more, it started off in a little donkey pasture, and it's taken up half my pasture, and I'm using something called Grazon to knock it back. But it's also appeared under my apple trees, and it's everywhere. Okay, so this is the stuff that I've already sprayed. Do I have to seed that, or will something come back up underneath it? And what do I do about under the apple trees?
Chickweed.
Yeah, and chickweed is a very common weed, and it tends to spread and forms this carpet. So if it's growing. I think chickweed's an annual, right, Kevin? So every year it really sprouts up from seed. So step one is to try to keep it from going to seed. And sometimes you can just do a lot of mowing short, and that keeps it from flowering and setting seed. But if you're using an herbicide on it, it's killing the existing plants, but it's not stopping the seeds that are in the seed bank from sprouting back. So once you get it out of there, like under your apple trees and stuff, as far as what's going to grow back up into there, if it's just bare soil once the chickweed dies, then throwing down some grass seed or something might be a good idea to get something else growing into that space. Make sure that whatever herbicide you use, that you read the label as far as when you can plant seed after, you know, how long after you've used that herbicide, that sort of a thing. You know, chickweed's just a tough one to get under control because it's very prevalent. If it finds bare soil, it's going to germinate and grow and then set a ton of seeds. So I'm not sure if that's answered all the questions, but Kevin.
Yeah, it is. It is an annual, you know, so the fact that, you know, any plant's goal in life is to reproduce. So it's making all these seeds, and those seeds are going to fall to the ground, and over winter the plant dies. But guess what? Those seeds just keep repropagating, and it just continuously reseeds itself. And that's where you get into how do you outcompete those germinating weed seeds so that, you know, that chickweed is kind of kept in check with, you know, some of that competition. So, you know, getting back to what Diana said is, you know, if you can encourage other more desirable plants to grow in that area and start to outcompete that, that's our standard approach is, you know, just try to find ways for that chickweed to be, you know, smothered with other plants. But there are options to use a pre-emergent herbicide that prevents weed seeds from germinating, and an organic one that you might hear about, and it's called that corn gluten meal. It does have pre-emergent activity in the fact that it interrupts the germination of those seeds. So that might be something, you know, if you're adverse to using a more conventional pre-emergent herbicides. And we do this all the time in our lawns with our crabgrass control. That's crabgrass is another annual. It reseeds every year. When do we put crabgrass weed and feed type products on our lawn? It's always in the spring because we want to prevent those weed seeds from germinating and let the grass, you know, outcompete any of those seedlings that might emerge. So that's just something to keep in mind.
And one other thing you said, like under the apples and stuff, if you can get the existing chickweed out of there, either pulling it out, killing it off, mowing it off, and then put down a thick layer of mulch. And this is where like shredded wood mulch is really good around mm-hmm. the base of trees because it takes a long time to decompose. But if you put down, again, you could put down a layer of cardboard or newspaper first. That will just decompose over time. And then 4 inches of shredded wood mulch, that will smother out those chickweed seeds that are currently in the soil and keep them from germinating. So that might be another option once you clear out what's there. And winter's going to freeze it off. So if you did that right away in the spring before the chickweed starts germinating and growing, you would prevent having it for the year under the apple trees.
There you go, Carrie. Thank you. Mona in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I have a question. Our landscaper said our maple tree is iron deficient. When's the best time of year to treat that? And are those iron spike things that you can buy for trees? Is that a good way to treat it? And
mm-hmm. Diana?
Well, first off, it is possible that the maple tree has an iron deficiency. However, that doesn't mean your soil doesn't have enough iron in it. I don't know if you know what your soil pH is, but the first thing I would do would be to do a soil test. It's $15 and that'll test your pH. You can spend an extra I don't know, maybe $5 or $10 to actually have the amount of iron in your soil tested. And I would do that first, because if your pH is too high, you can have all the iron in the world in your soil, but the plants can't take it up, and then they have an iron deficiency. So before I jump to the conclusion that your soil needs iron and that iron is going to help at all, I would get a soil test done, have it tested for at the lab so they can test the pH accurately, and also have it tested for iron. And then if you need iron, when you do your soil test, you'll say that you're trying to grow a maple tree. They'll tell you exactly how much iron to add. And usually the spikes, I'm not a fan of them because they dissolve in a small area, and that doesn't move outward. And of course, your tree's roots are all over the place. So I would prefer amending soil by spreading something over the surface of the whole root zone area to get those nutrients in there. But I would not jump to the conclusion that adding iron fertilizer or iron of any kind is going to solve your problem. In Wisconsin, we have very fertile soils, and most everybody's got enough iron. So it's really much more of a pH issue.
Exactly. Yes, it is a pH issue. And if it's too high, the iron just isn't as available. So get that soil test. And if the pH is 7 or above, you probably can fix the iron chlorosis, or at least help the tree by maybe putting down some pelletized lime rather than trying to amend it with iron. So soil test would be the place I would start, and then go from there.
And where does she get the soil test?
Well, UW-Madison Soil Test Lab. If you go online, Soil and Forage Lab, and they have all the information online on how to collect a sample and where to send it and all the things that Diane mentioned too, as far as, do you need other tests? But the routine soil test is where I always start.
And I do it now. Now's a good time of the year to do
it. Absolutely. Now is a great time. Send that sample in that's not frozen yet. And if you need to amend it by adding sulfur to lower the pH, you can do that now, because it takes a while for that to take effect, and it'll have winter, fall, and spring here to be adjusting that pH in the soil and get everything off to a good start in the spring. So now's a great time to be doing soil tests.
And thank you very much for that question, Mona. Appreciate it very much. And Kevin and Diana, thank you both very much. The time flew by, as it always
does.
Sure
did.
And we'll look forward to your next visit down the road. I'm sure you'll be, I hope you'll be back.
Always fun, Larry. Thanks a bunch for having us.
All right.
Yes. Yes, and greetings from northwestern Wisconsin.
Right? All right, greetings right back to you. Kevin Chesso is the Ag Development Educator in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Diana Offit, the UW Extension Hort Educator for Pierce County. Great to have them with us, and they'll come back and we'll do this again as well. Don't forget to go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Go to the program notes for today's date and fill out that little questionnaire. It'll take you about 2 minutes. It's not very long. Monday, we'll talk with a journalist who says recycling is not dead. In fact, it's created a boom with the COVID business. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.